Hello, this is David Brim, and I'm the founder of Orlando Entrepreneurs. We are the hub for Orlando entrepreneurship, and our mission is to connect, cultivate, and celebrate our local entrepreneurs. We bring together our local entrepreneurial ecosystem to help impact our entrepreneurs, their companies, and our local economy. Learn more at OrlandoEntrepreneurs.org. Now over to Josh Wilson to get forward with our show.
Good day, everyone, and welcome to the Orlando Entrepreneur Show. My name is Josh, and I'm an entrepreneur. I travel around having conversations with business leaders, with investors, with entrepreneurs, with just people who are building some incredible stuff here in Orlando to share their story to you, the audience. My goal is that together we give you hope, inspiration, and education so that you too can build great stuff here in Orlando and we can build an incredible ecosystem here. So on today's show, we're going to have a conversation with a female entrepreneur. She is a rock star in the world of real estate, and she has a really interesting and inspiring story. So ladies and gentlemen, welcome Kathy to the show. Kathy, welcome to the Orlando Entrepreneur Show.
Thank you for having me, Josh.
Awesome. And for those listening in, this is Kathy Sarook, and you're a real estate broker, is that right?
Yes.
Okay. So why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do?
I'm a real estate broker. About 3 years ago, I formed my own company. I'm the president of Sarook Realty, and I specialize in luxury, residential, commercial, as well as investment properties. Mostly in Central Florida.
Awesome. All right. So in your story, before we hit record and when we had coffee, we kind of like talked through a little bit of your story. And this isn't something that, this isn't something that you just grew up and you like really wanted to be a part of. This was something that kind of landed on you. All right. So kind of give us a little bit of your story of growing up in an entrepreneurial family, but kind of give us your story.
So my father has always been entrepreneurial. He moved to Central Florida, taking a job with Martin Marietta, and did that for a number of years. Has background construction, ran a large construction company here in Central Florida. He's done power generation and oil consulting in Texas in the oil fields for a number of years. So he's done a lot of different things. In 1992, he bought a big development in East Orange County from the Resolution Trust Corp. And around that time, I was finishing Rollins College. I graduated early, and my dad said, "Well, you know, what are you doing?" I said, "Well, getting my resume together. I'm going to figure out what I'm going to do." And he goes, "Actually, Monday, you're going to the Burt Rogers School of Real Estate." I said, "Well, I don't know that I want to do that." He goes, "That doesn't matter. You're going.
You're doing it. Yeah,
I'm doing it." So Monday, I showed up to Burt Rogers. There was a crash course to get your real estate license. It was 1 week. This was so many years ago that the state only gave exams once a month. So I took the class Monday to Friday. I took the class exam on Friday. Saturday, I took the state exam. And Monday, I showed up with a real estate license.
Wow.
And he put me in a construction trailer. And I said, "I have a confession to make. I passed the class and I passed the exam, but I don't know how to fill out a FARBAR contract, Florida real estate contract." And he said, "That's okay. Just take deposit checks. We'll take care of the rest."
That's awesome.
So I was in a construction trailer on a 3,000-acre planned unit development and dove in with both feet.
They really tossed you into the wolves and really learned about real estate by learning a little bit of the bookwork, but then getting tossed into the construction trailer on a big development going on.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So what was that like the first time the customer walked up? You're a newbie. You've never even dealt with these kind of contracts.
It was daunting. I mean, it was really daunting on top of the fact my job wasn't necessarily just sales. Mine was marketing, rebranding the property. It was broker relations, getting people out to the property. This was at a time when there was a big, East Orange County was sort of new and growing. The expansion of the Alafaya Trail for the expressway had just been opened. People really didn't know where it was and how to use it. It was a big project. It was a big project that was at the very early stages. And they had a golf course in place. We were the home team for the UCF golf team. We had a Tommy Armour tournament there. So we had some things happening, but there was more happening at the golf course than there was from the housing aspect and the development perspective. So I did everything from take plans for new subdivisions. I had to name all the streets. I had to come up with all sorts of crazy things, and I'd take them down to the county and I'd walk the plans through and sit with, you know, all of the development team and the infrastructure team, and it was a little bit of everything. It was definitely drinking from the fire hose.
Wow. Now, this is typically a job that someone has much more experience in. They're much older, and this is something that they've learned over the years. You've got tossed in, and you had to learn multiple aspects really, really fast.
Right.
Did anybody ever like look down and just say, "Oh, you're just a young person," or "You're just this"? Like, did you experience anybody looking down on you?
Oh,
like
all
when
the
you
time.
Got started?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, I was 21 when I started this job, just out of college.
Yeah.
You know, my dad owned the development, so I was the boss's kid, so I had that working against me, and everybody just assumed I was given a job that I wasn't qualified for, and I was a place card holder. So I had to work twice as hard to show that, okay, I don't know this, but I can figure it out, and I'm going to shadow somebody, and I'm going to follow them to go do something that maybe I don't have to do so that I can learn something that and have an understanding of something that I go to these meetings and I'm not asking stupid questions and taking up people's time. I'm making the most of the time that I'm there.
So you really took it serious. You took
your
job serious and you earned the respect of these people that you were working with.
It took some time.
Yeah, it did. I bet. What advice do you have for other entrepreneurs who are just getting started, feel overwhelmed, like underprepared when they're diving in and they're having conversations with experts and attorneys and contractors and all these things where they feel like completely unprepared? Like, what advice do you have for people out there getting started?
I mean, I think the most important thing is to not feel that you're entitled to something. It's not a given that, you know, you may be smart and you may be a go-getter and you may be all these things, but you're not entitled to anything. And if it's cleaning up the trash cans and, you know, picking up things in the bathroom, that's just what you may have to do so that people know that you're taking it seriously. I mean, there are no menial jobs. There's just, it's all how you look at it. And if you take it seriously and you're like, well, I'm here for a reason. I'm going to make use of every minute I have, either to understand something that I don't know, to shadow somebody, to pick up information that may be useful sometime in the future, even if it doesn't seem relevant to what I'm doing right at the moment. You've got to do it. You have to, I use the analogy, take your toolbox with you and put things in the toolbox as you go along. You know, you don't buy a toolbox with everything in it you need. You get your box and you pick things up one by one. And once you accumulate them, you've got things to work with. So.
Yeah. Now, you started to earn the respect of people, and you started to really do a lot of transactions. You guys did a tremendous amount of transactions and deals that kind of went through that.
Yes.
Could you give us an idea as to the kind of volume you guys were doing?
We were having hundreds of closings a month, but the transactions that I worked with builders, sometimes it was takedown schedules for a lot. It was big parcels of land. It wasn't necessarily individual houses, although the salespeople that represented different builders, we'd have meetings and we'd have understandings of what traffic was being generated. And gosh, if I had a dollar for every bandit sign I put along Colonial Drive and Alfea Trail, we'd put out thousands a week. I mean,
yeah.
It was just, we just covered it up completely. So it was a gathering of information from a lot of different sources.
Yeah. At any point, did you feel completely overwhelmed and you felt like throwing in the towel and quitting? Because you were young,
yeah.
Building this, like that's a lot of pressure for a young person diving into this.
It was, and my husband at the time got involved in the family business too. So that, you know, working with my father, working with my husband, and all of us, it's a lot of togetherness. It's
yeah.
A lot of togetherness when, you know, everybody's great, it gets along, and of course you have conflict and you have disagreements or different points of view. And really, I think my frustration when I walked away from it was when I took the attitude of, this is just too much. You know, I don't want to be caught between my husband and my father, and that conflict is really the reason that I walked away from it.
Okay.
So
what What did that look like as, you know, you walked away from that? Like, what did you walk towards, and was it a hard decision for you to make? Because this is something that you started. Husband
right.
came into the picture.
Right.
He took over.
It wasn't a hard decision. I mean, our roles evolved. This uh-huh. was over a period of maybe 6 years.
Okay.
So it was a slow evolution. You know, in the beginning it was slow, and as we picked up more momentum, it got more involved.
Yeah.
And that was a good thing. I mean, we were all happy to see it succeed. So when I walked away, I didn't feel like, I felt it was my choice. It was my choice to decide, hey, maybe there's something other than real estate I want to pursue. Like, everybody's in it. Maybe if I do something different, it'll be better for all of us.
Yeah.
So it wasn't hard to walk away. I'm glad that I did it
yeah.
because I needed that chance to find, well, what do I want to do?
Okay.
You know, am I doing this because everybody's asked me to do it, or am I doing it because this is what I want to do?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of got pushed into this. Like,
yes.
You will do that, right?
I did.
So then, what did you decide to do? So you left that, like...
I left that.
What was next in your life as you rebuilt your identity and found some other mm-hmm. adventures? Like, what was that?
I was always interested in design,
yeah.
Even though that's not what my background was in. And I went to work for a large interior design firm here. I knew the principals. And it was my chance to kind of pursue... That seemed like it was a good fit for me. It was still sales. It was still creative, probably more so than what I was doing previously. And it was great to work for a big firm that had big jobs. We did commercial jobs. We did high-end residential. It was still home-related,
mm-hmm.
but it was more of a creative outlet for me, and I really liked that aspect of it.
Awesome. So in our previous conversations... Life was kind of rolling around, and kids started to come in the picture, and family started to come in the picture. And then some things happened where
yes.
you had to hit a life reset button.
Yes.
Are you okay talking about some
yes.
of that stuff with us?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Because I think that this is valuable for people listening into the audience whose life has given you a reset button
mm-hmm.
and sometimes forced a reset button on you. And I just thought your story was so inspirational that I want to... you know, share that with the audience. So I appreciate your courage in this. And
thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So kind of talk to us about, you know, when life hit a reset button on an entrepreneur.
So my first reset button, I actually got divorced the day that my daughter was born. So that was in 2000. And that was my husband that was involved in the development business with my dad. And it ended very badly, and it, you know, was part of the demise of our marriage. The timing, of course, was terrible.
The day your daughter was born.
Yes. Yes. So, you know, that was a pretty monumental day. But it was good in the sense that was the first reboot, and I had the child I always wanted. And to not be sort of daily involved in a marriage that was full of conflict and family business was a conflict, I kind of just stepped back and had this epiphany, like, okay, well, I got what I really wanted, which was my daughter. And I was financially well enough that I could kind of say, okay, I'm going to take a couple of years and see just what this looks like. I'm going to be a mom and figure out where I go from here. So I was lucky in that I didn't have, you know, financial woes that would have maybe made me make some rash decisions.
Sure.
So I kind of took a step back. Oddly enough, I met my second husband when my daughter was 3 months old. So he thought we had met through mutual friends, and he thought I had a 3-year-old. And I go, no, I have a 3-month-old.
Yeah.
So I kind of got back into the dating pool kind of quickly. But I don't know. It wasn't forced. It was just kind of where I was at.
Yeah.
And got remarried and had my second child. My children are 2 years apart, so I had another
yeah.
child pretty quickly. My second husband didn't have any children.
Yeah.
And that was kind of what he wanted. He signed up for. He's like, this is great. I've met somebody with a young child that I will be the dad, and, you know, let's have an us child. And we were kind of the new nuclear family. So we
yeah.
didn't talk about our kids being, you know, half brother and sister. We were a family.
And a family.
And my daughter's father was still involved, you know, in her life. And I remember going to kindergarten meetings and, like, well, this is, you know, my daughter's dad and this is my daughter's other dad. And it was very amiable, and we made it work. We made it work. And that was great for our kids' sake. And I can remember, you know, my son got a little bit older, and it was strange because I sort of had two only children, because on the weekends that my daughter spent with her father, I had just my son. So it was interesting having kind of this two only children.
Yeah.
They were together most of the time, but when they were apart, it was different. And I remember my son asking one time, could he go with his sister's father? She's like, well, they do such great things and it sounds really fun, and why can't I go?
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, you know, how do you sort of explain this? And I just said, well, you know, that's Anna's dad and that's her time with him. But I remember my son just being like,
confused,
well, gosh, I got left out in the cold on this one. Why don't I get to go to Disney?
Yeah, I want two dads too, right?
Yeah, exactly. So he goes, I want twice as many birthday presents. So that part, it was good. I mean, we made the best of the situation. And, you know, when parents can sort of set aside their differences for the sake of your kids,
yeah,
it's to the best benefit of your kids.
Yeah.
You know, to making them collateral damage is just, it's just, life is hard enough.
Yeah.
You know? It really is. So.
And throw in the mix of, like, life and family and business and,
sure,
you know, trying to grow that, it's, it could be overwhelming for anybody. And,
yeah.
This is real good, and I'm glad you're just being really open about this, because this is a lot of times when building business, we're not just focused on our business. We're keeping everything else afloat, our family,
sure,
our finances, our belief systems, the things we volunteer in, and all these things that we're trying to juggle it, right?
Of course.
So, you know, what kept you strong while juggling all these things? Like, what was your core thing that kept you moving?
You know, being a good mom to my children. I mean, I think as moms, we think it's selfish when we don't put other people as our first priority.
Yeah.
And, you know, I guess I'm fortunate that when my second divorce happened and the big reboot that I've gone through at this point, my kids were a little bit older.
Mm-hmm.
They were 12 and 14 when I got separated the second time. So it was helpful in that I didn't have this fear of, gosh, I don't want to leave them in daycare. And not that this is what lots of people do, and they have great care for their children. And I just was really fortunate that I felt like I could take care of me in the process of taking care of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, so life reboot happened again. And that this one kind of threw you into a whirlwind.
Yes.
A little bit.
It's harder. I mean, I think when you've been, I had done some interior design work, never on a full-time basis and never to support myself,
yeah,
not for 15 years, 14 years. So when you've been out of the workforce for a fair amount of time, I mean, obviously I'm computer literate and I know computer programming and you know, enough things to be dangerous. I can do a PowerPoint only because my kids learned how to do,
yeah,
it in school. It's daunting, but I guess in some ways I'm fortunate that my hand was forced and I had to, put on my big girl pants and make it work.
Yeah.
So.
That's interesting that you said I was fortunate that my hand was forced. What do you mean by that?
So my husband left. It wasn't, let's try and work it out. It was, hey, I've gotten a place and I'm moving out and, you know, I don't want this anymore.
Yeah.
So, and he left. He didn't take the kids with him. We kind of didn't know, you know, we didn't have a plan of how are we going to divide assets and figure out where we're all going to live. And I haven't had a job.
How am I going to pay for food?
Right. How am I going to do this? So, and he really wasn't in a position to, he didn't want to figure that out. He's more of a, he was always in control of our finances. He was always in control of, you know, our housing, our vacations, our bank accounts, things like that. So, you know, was it my mistake to give that up? Yes, but, you know, when you get married and you have a partnership, there's some things in the partnership you say, okay, that's your thing and this is my thing.
Yeah.
And, if you have a partner that doesn't want to be transparent and doesn't want to sort of share those things with you or involve you in the process, there's only so many things you can fight about. I mean, there's only so many things you can demand. Yeah. And okay, I want to know, I want to understand, and I need you to take the time to explain it to me. But if you have someone who isn't willing to do that, what do you do? I mean, do you say, okay, enough, I'm out of here? You know, we have two kids and we have a life and we have a house and we have all this stuff.
I have no clue.
So, you know, marriage is, in my mind, should be partnerships, and it stopped being a partnership a long time ago. So I'm thankful for the fact that he recognized that whatever our dynamic was, it just wasn't going to work. It wasn't going to work going forward.
Yeah.
And I'd rather know that at, I think when we separated, I was 45, 46 years old. I would rather know that now than at 55 or 65 and being out of it that much longer and getting back in, because, you know, fear is really holding you back from anything that you want to do. And for all the things that happen when there's a death or a divorce or something happens with one of your children, fear can just be paralyzing. And that paralysis, the longer it goes on, the more it takes a hold. And I think you have to shake that off and you just have to move forward. Whatever it is, it may be a lateral move, but at least it's movement. Yeah. You're not just being sedentary and saying, okay, you know, because it's like laying in bed. If you just lay there long enough, you're not going to be able to get out of it.
Hmm. That was really good. All right, let's repeat that. If you lay in bed long enough, you won't be able to get out of it.
Right.
So you need movement to get out of bed, to get things moving. So the second one, and I really love your optimism in this. You're fortunate that your hand was forced.
Mm-hmm.
Did you feel like that at the time when it happened? And that might have been the dumbest question I've ever
asked.
No,
it's not dumb. It's not dumb. I actually, I felt relieved. I felt relieved because I think I had fought for so long to try and make it something that I wanted it to be. Mm-hmm. And it probably was never going to be that. So I'm happy that somebody said, hey, I'm done. Like, I'm done working on it. I'm done with therapy. I'm done with whatever, you know, whatever it may be to try and fix it. If it's not fixable, okay, I can grasp that. So I was really relieved.
Okay. That's awesome, because a lot of times, especially hard-headed entrepreneurs, we'll just hold on. And sometimes life needs to force things upon us. Mm-hmm. It had to do it for me multiple times in my life.
Right.
So I think that I love your optimism, and I love the way you view this. When the second life reset happened on you, it wasn't like the first one where you had time and money.
And I wasn't young.
Yeah.
You know, there's something to be said, you know, when it happens when you're 29 versus, you know, mid-40s, that looks very different. And to me, it looks different being a woman, because when I was in my 20s, I couldn't wait. You talked about the respectability and how people looked at me at my job. And I remember being in my 20s thinking, I can't wait to get to be older than 30, where maybe somebody takes it seriously. Maybe they look at me differently.
Yeah.
And then you get on the other side of it where you're not the spring chicken anymore. And you go, oh, darn. You know, now they're going to look at me and be like, she's not relevant. You know, you're too old to be relevant now. And you've been a mom for, you know, I made cupcakes. I was homeroom mom. I, you know, of all the ridiculous things that I did, I did it out of love. I wanted to do that with my kids. But you can't put that on your resume.
Cupcake bakery. I mean, if you're going to start a bakery, maybe.
I was like, man, I made the best poster ever.
So,
I mean, it feels different. But I think being in my 40s and that happening, I did have some of the confidence to say, you know, this isn't about, I was a couple and now it's about me.
Yeah.
And at 40, I could say, it's okay for it to be about me. I have something to say. I'm relevant. I have a lot of life left in this. And I'm looking at it with fresh eyes, and I'm looking at it with the experience I had in my past. And I remember somebody saying, oh, wouldn't you go back if you could do it all over again? I said, absolutely not. I have two great kids. I have, you know, I can't take all the good. I can't take the credit for all the good things in them. You know, they're as much their fathers as they are me. And I wouldn't be in a place at the age I am now if I didn't have my kids and I hadn't lived some of the experiences and I hadn't done some of the things that I've already done. Yeah. Because I'd be making decisions to try and fit it all in. And I'm not, at 48, I'm not trying to fit it all in. I know that I've got time to do the things that I want, and I can look back and say I don't have any regrets about the time in the past.
Yeah.
But if you're not growing, you're dying. If you're not moving ahead, you're dying on the vine.
If you're not growing,
you're dying.
You're dying. Love it. So it's kind of like the second round. You were forced into entrepreneurship because you didn't have the financial stability at that point, from at least what I remember in the story, and correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes.
But you were kind of forced into, I've been out of the workforce for like 15 years or so. Right. I have to go work.
Right.
I have to go hustle.
I have to hustle. I have to pay attorneys. I have to, you know, fight for what I deserve in a divorce.
Yeah.
I have to make sure my kids are okay in this process. Yeah. And my kids went through some hard things, some very hard things. And I don't know if it was time, you know, if it was reaction or, you know, kids have lots of social pressures and things on them. And I know lots of people with kids, they're bullied or they don't fit in, or they all go through things. Look, growing up is hard anyway.
Yeah.
And on top of the fact of your parents fighting and moving around and the movement and all this kind of thing. And I just, that's heartbreaking to put your kid, you know, it's enough to go through it yourself and then to see your kids have to do that too. But I tried to make it as easy as possible. And I took the attitude of, look, I've got to stay alive. I'm fighting the fight. I sold everything I could get money for so that I could pay the lawyers and pay the accountants and pay my bills. And, you know, I just, fortunately, I had my family here. I had great family support.
Yeah.
I'm an only child, so I don't have brothers and sisters to call on. I had some great friends that were there for me. You know, I remember the times that we had Christmas parties. We'd have 150 people at our Christmas parties. And it's sort of interesting when times get tough and all your friends at the country club don't call you anymore because, you know, divorce is one of those things. I think people think it's kind of catching, you know.
It's contagious.
It's contagious.
Don't rub this off on me.
You don't want to get sucked into the vortex.
Right,
exactly. So you know, it's hard enough, but then the people that you thought were your friends that you interact with all the time sort of pull back because you don't fit anymore. You know, as a single, you don't fit in that realm. And fortunately, I had a handful of really good friends that, you know, I could call, and they gave me great advice, and I gave them permission to cut me off when I'm like, if this is going on too long, you can cut me off. I can go pay $100 to a therapist and dump my things on them. But most of my friends were great. I tried not to, you know, self-pity doesn't do anything. And somebody told me one time that hatred corrodes the vessel it's contained in. And
where do you get all these, like, these are good?
I don't know. I hang on to some of these nuggets sometimes. And
so say this again.
Hatred corrodes the vessel it's contained in. So when you talk about my divorce and my ex-husbands, and there is no hatred. You know, there's things that we did that were not nice to each other, you know, and I don't want to proceed that way in my relationships with them because they're my kids' fathers. And we interact. I mean, I have them to dinner when we have kids' birthdays and things so that it's not a choice of do I go to dad's or do I go here. I don't want that. And, you know, I always say, well, we don't have sex and we don't share money, so we really don't have anything to fight about anymore,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, and hatred is just something that will really chip away at you. And, you know, everybody's like, you're always so happy and you're always so positive. I'm like, but that's a choice. Being happy and positive just makes everything better. I mean, why grind it out and why be angry and carry all this resentment and negativity around when everybody has stuff. Everybody's going through something.
Everybody is.
You know, everybody. And, you know, I go out every day and I try to talk to people. You know, I kiddingly say I would talk to wallpaper. But it's good for me because I'm social and I like the interaction. And I always tell people, yes, I'm a real estate broker, but I'm really in the relationship business. And I build relationships sometimes in really out of the way, you know, the craziest places. Talking to the guy at Barney's, he's like, I just want a cup of coffee. I go, well, they don't just really serve coffee here. You're going to have to wait.
Yeah.
It's like, so, but it's great. The people that I meet and the interactions that I have give a great perspective on my own life.
Yeah.
And I always like, look, I'm, you know, I don't have all the answers and I can only sort of dole out from what I have an experience, but I like those interactions. And sometimes you might be the lifeline to somebody that hasn't had anybody to say something to or have anything uplifting said to them. Like, you can do this.
Mm-hmm.
You have to believe. And you're doing something right every day. And don't be so hard on yourself.
Yeah.
That doesn't accomplish anything.
Not at all. So you then had to get back into the workforce.
Yes.
And you had to go hustle again.
So it was really interesting. I had been away from real estate for so long that my licenses were null and void. I had not renewed them in over 10 years. So I really started at ground zero. And I re-enrolled in real estate school, and all I could think of was, oh my gosh, I did this when I was just out of college and studying all the time. How in the world am I going to do this
again? Yeah.
Like, I haven't been to school in a long time, a very long time.
Yeah.
And I went back to real estate school, and it really was the best thing I ever did. Because, number one, it made me realize how much I knew about it, that I really didn't give myself credit for. Number two, it gave me confidence about, hey, you know, I do know this, I get this. And the best part of it, this time it was on my terms. I went back because I wanted to go back and to see, do I really like this? Is this something that fulfills me and makes me happy? Because if you're in a career that you're not passionate about or you don't love, it's a misery. It doesn't matter how much money you make. If you don't like what you do and you don't look forward to getting up every day and doing it, it's not worth it. And going back to real estate school made me realize, hey, I get this. I like this. I'm actually pretty good at this. So I got my real estate license. I didn't pass the test the first time, of course. I remember I'm bawling in the computer center. Well, when I went to take the test again, hello, I didn't realize it wasn't a bubble test anymore. It was on a computer. And we talked about my tactility thing. So yeah. I'm used to scratching through a couple of answers and circling keywords. And those notations are how I take tests. I'm not a good test taker. And at the computer terminal, you can't do any of that.
Yeah, if you draw on the computer screens,
they don't like that. Yeah, they're going to kick you out. So I really wasn't prepared for that. And it threw me. It threw me. And I didn't pass the test the first time. And I remember just like I'm in the hallway just bawling. Like, I've got to get this license back. Like, I've got to get started again. And I a couple days later, I took it again. And I went on YouTube. And I remember I Google searched how to pass the real estate exam. And somebody on one of these, you know, a YouTube blurb said, you have a whiteboard when you go into these testing centers. And they said, take your whiteboard, and when the question comes up, cover up the answers with the whiteboard.
Oh, that's smart.
They go, because what happens, these questions are written in a way, you get halfway through the question, and you start looking for the answers to fill in the question, instead of reading the entire question and formulating the answer in your head.
Mm-hmm.
So, and of course, I'm type A. I've got to get through it the fastest and the best of anybody. So I recognize that. And they said, put the whiteboard up, read the question in its entirety twice, and then formulate the answer, and then look at the answers. And that was just a total, like the light bulb went off. It was a total aha moment for me. Like, stop and read the question. So, and in my, you know, a lot of the questions are, all of the following are true except, which just totally makes my head explode because that's like the double negative. So I passed the test with that simple advice of covering up the answers. And I've mentioned that to people before. I said, if you didn't have a real estate license 20 years ago, you don't remember the bubble test, but it's different. So I got my real estate license. I went and enrolled with a broker that was in my garden club near my house at the time. Because it felt safe. I don't know that it was, I didn't approach going to work for a brokerage in the sense of who's going to give me the best for my career. Mm-hmm. I just was too new at it and too fresh. And actually, in my real estate career before, I hadn't sold houses. I did more
community development.
Right. Bigger picture types of things. And I would be the first to say I didn't know how to sell a house. I'd never actually done home transactions. And I signed up with a broker, I think, because she was a friend and it felt safe. But it really didn't help my career. It didn't give me the tools that I needed to really get off to a running start. So I did that for about, I was maybe with that firm 6, 7, 8 months. Mm-hmm. There were some great people in the office, and I shadowed them. You know, we have floor duty and we have to answer the phones, which was a total waste of time. But I had some great people in the office that would let me follow them around and kind of see what they were up to and get to know some of the areas that they were farming. And I had a friendship with another broker in town, and we'd catch up periodically. And he kept saying, look, when the time comes, you're coming over my way. And we'd meet once a month. He's like, you're not ready. You're not ready. Well, finally, he's like, you're ready. And in the meantime, I went back to work at a fine jewelry store that I had done some part-time work for.
Yeah, because most real estate is full commission, which...
It's full commission.
You don't sell, you don't eat.
You know, 6 months, you need 6 months of cushion before things are going to start to pop. And 6 months when you're hanging by a thread is a long time. So, and the other thing that sort of catapulted me, I knew that staying busy was a way to keep me moving forward.
Yeah.
For the first time in my life, I had a week without my children. So a completely empty house, when I had been a full-time stay-at-home mom, to nobody's at home. Nobody's at home. I have no reason to get home. Mm-hmm. And so I went to work at this fine jewelry store. And it was great because it was my social life. It was a paycheck. And it gave me... it was great because I didn't have to go out and prospect. They came to me, which was great. Salespeople, look, we get gratification from people getting... We get people to do what we want them to do, okay? So this was perfect. I'm in an environment that I loved.
And people are coming to you.
Coming to me, selling beautiful things. And it's like, this is great. I love this. So I did that, and we had an arrangement that if I needed to run out and take a listing call or do something for real estate related, I would make sure it didn't impact anybody else working that day, and I'd come back as soon as I could. And it created this, I didn't realize at the time that I was prospecting. And I was starting my career in a way, it was organic, but it's hard to explain. It was organic and it kind of happened by chance.
It was very synergistic.
It was. And I think that's the best thing that entrepreneurs can do. Like we talked about things that are maybe outside your scope that you don't realize they sort of become embraced in what you're doing, whether directly or indirectly. And being at the jewelry store gave me an outlet. It was social for me to interact with people. And it was a big confidence booster. And then I really hit it big. I got some listings close to the jewelry store, close to downtown Park Avenue. And then people would come in the jewelry store, hey, I saw you got a new listing down the street. So tell me about it. Or somebody would see a sold sign close. You know, most of the houses that I had listings were within a couple blocks of Park Avenue.
So for those listening in who might not know Park Avenue, so you're working on Park Avenue at a nice jewelry store. In this area, this is affluent area.
Yes.
And the homes are are big and expensive.
Yes, 32789 actually has the highest income. It's over $58,000 per household, which mm-hmm. for the Tri-County area is the highest. Mm-hmm. So this is, you know, they say Bonnie and Clyde, why do you rob banks? Because that's where the money is. Yeah. Why do I sell real estate here? Because this is where it hits. Yeah. So, and I know it. I grew up in the zip code. I went to high school here. I went to Rollins College. So this is my farm.
You know the streets.
This is it.
Yeah.
I've been in most of the houses in Winter Park at one time or another.
Yeah.
So.
So you started getting listings. You're selling jewelry, which provided stability.
Right.
It provided action and activity for you to stay busy.
Right.
And it actually created opportunity. But you were really honest with the store owners and saying, hey, I'm doing real estate. This is, you know, to supplement.
Right.
And they were actually happy for you.
Yes. No, they were great. And I said, look, I'll take any hours that somebody else doesn't want on the weeks that I don't have my kids, because I don't mind working Saturday. I don't mind working Sunday. My children aren't with me. I will work as much as possible when they're not with me. And of course, I'm going to have to work when they're with me too. Mm-hmm. And that was hard. I felt really guilty about that. I remember telling my kids, you know, getting them to school in the morning wasn't a problem. Getting them in the afternoon, I had to sort of make arrangements, and I had great friends and neighbors that would bring them home. Say, look, you're going to have to do this for a couple hours until I get home. This is what I have to do. And I remember my daughter saying that she was really proud of me. And I finally had to tell myself, stop apologizing. Stop saying you're sorry. What are you sorry about? It isn't like you're sitting at home with the covers pulled up, you know, drinking martinis until you can't stand it. You know, I said, I have to stop saying I'm sorry. It's just ridiculous.
What helped you come up with that decision? Because I think we get into this zone, and sometimes I do it even with my kids. If they're like, I want this, and I'm like, well, we can't.
Right.
Dad's got to work, or we can't afford it, or whatever the case may be. Being an entrepreneur, there's right. highs where your bank account looks awesome.
Yeah.
And there's lows where you're figuring out how to pay groceries and such like that, but it's just like, how did you get to the point where you said, I need to stop apologizing. I'm working. I'm doing my best. What caused that transformation?
I mean, look, if you're hard on yourself, and I think type A personalities and entrepreneurs, you know, we think outside the box. We're really out there at sometimes, but I think that we expect more of ourselves than anybody else, mm-hmm. for sure.
Yeah.
And I finally got to the point, I think it was maybe my attorney or my forensic accountant that said, you know, we've really never met anybody like you. You look at the positive and you say, I did my best. I did my best. And I'm going to wake up tomorrow and I'm going to try even harder to even do better. Sometimes you advance the ball, sometimes you fall back. But as long as you get up and you say, I'm going to do everything I can today, and I'm not going to let a setback. Look, setbacks are part of it. It's the people that don't learn from the setbacks that don't move ahead. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if something isn't working, what's the definition of insanity?
Doing the same thing over and over, right?
Exactly. So it's okay to make mistakes. It's okay to stumble or not accomplish everything that you wanted. But if you're taking a new approach, or you're looking at it differently, or you're saying, how can I change it for the better, or just change it. Sometimes just change is the most important thing. And I used to tease one of my friends. I said, I'm making t-shirts for Christmas that say, embrace the change. Because my entire life, as I knew it and how I looked at it, I had to let it go. And I see women and I see friends that come to me for advice that their life is going to change. You can't prevent it. You can't stick your head in the sand and say, I don't want it to happen. Just like we said, my situation was kind of forced on me. You have to accept it. And if you accept it and you embrace that things are going to look different and feel different and be different, but that's okay because the possibilities are endless. Whatever that looks like, you don't know unless you open yourself to the possibility. And change is tough. We don't like
change
to change.
Change is tough.
We're creatures of habit. We don't like things to be different.
Yeah.
And the more, I think the more that you accept it and the more that you change things, even if it's something little or it's a habit that you turn into something different, the more that you accept change, the easier it becomes. And you don't get bogged down in things that, in the big perspective, don't matter. Like, I see women, this is a great example. I see women get divorced and they're like, I want the house. I don't care about anything. I just want to keep our house. And they've got a 5-bedroom, 4-bath, 5,000 square foot house with a pool on the lake, and their kids are older.
Like, what do you want the house for?
Right. Like, the house isn't going to keep your memories or make you live the life that maybe that was the best time of your life. I see people make financial decisions, particularly about their house. I grew up in this house. My kids were raised in this house. We have all these memories in this house. And it's a bad decision. It's a bad decision because it will drain you financially. Yeah. And then when you need to get out of it, the timing may not be right for it. Yeah. So thinking ahead and being practical and accepting that, well, my kids aren't going to be with me every day and everybody's not going to come home at Christmas and I don't need 5 bedrooms. It's not the end of the world if somebody stays in a hotel. Yeah. And I can well afford that versus paying taxes and insurance on a house that nobody lives in anymore.
And I don't have to apologize for it.
Right.
Yeah. So that right there, the way you approach that and those kind of conversations that you're having with people about houses. Houses are great. It's the memories that we create with people and the environment and those around it that really make a house valuable and, mm-hmm. and that. Do you find when you're working with people that you're doing a lot of not only kind of counseling and coaching on house, but also on life?
Yes. Okay. So home purchases are incredibly personal.
Yeah.
And it, number one, it's the most... it's most people's most significant financial investment.
Okay? Yeah.
And it's highly charged emotionally. I see it. I tease that I'm a house counselor, yeah. you know, instead of a real estate broker. And I think one of the things that I recognize in myself is that I have a high EQ. I think I enjoy talking to people and getting to know people because that emotional quotient is what makes me good at my job. You know, the technicalities and the transaction part of it, you can learn that. I don't think EQ is something that you can learn. You either are intuitive and you have it and you sort of get what drives people without them telling you, mm-hmm. Or you don't. And I think my skill set is I'm very highly attuned to what motivates people and what drives them and the dynamics maybe between them. And, you know, you can... the only way you can find that out about people is about building a relationship with them and spending time with them. And this year has been interesting for me. The 4 listings I've had this year are all houses I've previously sold. And to me, that's a big accomplishment to me to say, these are people I've worked with and they want to continue to work with me. And they will work with me no matter what it is. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that. That means a lot. That means that I'm doing something right. I'm not just about making a sale and getting a commission. I can do that. That's not that complicated. But I want people to make sound decisions, and I want to give sound advice. I'm an advisor. Look, at the end of the day, if you're gonna get into a house you can't really afford and you just want to do it, okay, that's on you. But I'm not gonna advise you that way through the process. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna understand what your needs and wants are and help you make decisions that, you know, make it a happy decision and not a stressful one. And people get really wrapped around the axle about buying houses. I mean, I get text messages at 3:00 in the morning. So, I get it. And we have all these outlets. Everybody's like, oh, do you watch Million Dollar Listing? Well, of course I watch Million Dollar Listing, but it's not really like that. I mean, it's entertaining. And we have Zillow and we have HGTV. I mean, there's so many things. Houses and interiors and homes mm-hmm. are entertainment.
Yeah.
It's entertaining to us to see how other people live or what the market in our area is doing or what the latest, greatest features are in kitchen equipment. I mean, look, it's something that we can all relate to because we all need it and use it.
Yeah.
So I get it, and I tell people, look, I'm most likely not going to be the one that finds the house of your dreams, but I'm going to help you decide if that's a sound decision or not.
Yeah.
So
now you became a broker. You had to go back, start from square one, become an agent. While going through school and while getting everything up and running again, you worked to keep mm-hmm. the lights on and to keep things funded. You became an agent, did that for a while, became a broker, opened up your own brokerage. Mm-hmm. Now you are boss, CEO of this, and you specialize in high-end luxury homes. And you also do, you were telling me, you know, you guys do business here and you have mm-hmm. other projects going on. So right
I
now...
I do commercial as well.
So. In commercial, mm-hmm. in commercial properties. So you are in hustle mode.
Mm-hmm.
And when I said that, you just, huge smile came across your face. Yeah. Like, you love the hustle of
this. Yeah, of course.
So as you're building this and as you're growing, like, what is the prize for you?
What's the prize for me? I mean, I think in the last 5 years, the prize for me has been proving that I can do it.
Yeah.
Because I think for so long, I was told I can't do it. You can't. And nothing sparks something more in me than to tell me that I can't do it. Like, it's on. Okay.
Game on, right?
Right. Exactly. So, but I've kind of gotten a little bit past that now. It isn't about the hustle. It isn't about the game of it. I just enjoy the challenges that come with, it's something new every day in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't imagine, you know, I hear people not that much older than me talk about retiring. And I think, well, I don't ever want to retire. Like, if this is the world and I get to do this forever, I can do this forever. It gives me purpose. It gives me a reason to get up. It keeps me relevant. And I like that. I don't ever want to not be those things. Mm-hmm. And I think it's easy because now, I mean, my kids are still, they still need me, but they don't need me as much. And so I kind of say, well, what does this look like? Well, it looks like whatever I want it to. And I have the opportunity to work on some really interesting projects. Some of them are long shots. I mean, that's what we do as entrepreneurs. We take risks. Mm-hmm. Some of them are big. Some of them are calculated. Some of them are just because you just want to see what's going to happen. And I love that part of it. So for me, the outcome is I get something new every day. I get a new challenge every day. So the changes that I've been in my past, I get to see that happen all the time. And at the end of it, maybe there's some projects that can be a legacy for me. I can say, I did that. I built that. I accomplished that.
Yeah.
I sold that. And I've done some of those along the way. Nothing huge, but some pretty big things that I'm proud of. You know, I can't wait to see what's next.
That's awesome. What question should I have asked you that I didn't ask you?
I have to say the reboot in this life has been really interesting with the help of my dad. You've spoken to my dad.
Yeah.
And he's an entrepreneur, and it's been great this time around to kind of get to do it with him and to be a little more of an equal. You know, when I was in my 20s, I couldn't say that I was an equal because I just didn't have the experience. And some of the projects that we're doing together is because the baton's going to be passed to me.
Yeah.
My dad's approaching 70, and he still works all the time, too. But
he loves the game, too.
He loves the game, of course. And I think more than anything, he loves the game with me. It's been really fun to do it this time. So he doesn't want to walk away from it because we're getting to do it together, which is incredible.
And you guys were on a construction project this morning.
Yes, we were.
doing some fun stuff.
Like, what am I doing today? Okay.
Yeah.
Let me go to the toolbox. So
there you go. What? Two more questions, and then I want to leave a really cool call to action for entrepreneurs out there. One question or one thing that I'd love for you to share and we'll get really specific for women out there whose life has given them a forced hand on a reboot.
Mm-hmm.
What is one piece of advice you could give them? whatever age they may be, life is forced to reset on them, to challenge their identity, to crack them, to put them back in, you know, whatever. What is one piece of advice you have for them?
You really do have to embrace the change and not be afraid. If you're afraid, you won't challenge yourself to try something maybe you didn't consider, or surround yourself with people that are positive. I mean, unfortunately, I think there's always people that love to see somebody pushed off the pedestal, and you have to cut those people out of your life. It's an anchor that is going to take you down. And, you know, we all know the group of people, they love to gossip and they love to, you know, talk about, you know, the downfall of whomever and the spiral that they're on. And you can't get caught up in that. If you get caught up in that, you're not going to move ahead. You're not going to make a life that you can say, I did this. Look, we all need help along the way, no doubt. But if you get bogged down in it, and if you stay in bed, look, we all go through all the emotions that happen with a big loss, the grief, the denial, the all of it. And that's okay to feel that. But at some point, you have to move ahead. I mean, I remember I bought books. I started reading books about successful CEOs and disruptors. Jay Samet, that wrote the book about disrupting, is a friend of mine. And I like that whole sense of taking friction out of the system and being a disruptor. And I'd start to ask myself, well, how do I disrupt the way that things are going?
Yeah.
Even if it's a little thing. You know, whatever it may be. And little things add up to be something big. If you start making little changes along the way, it puts you on a different path.
Yeah, that's good. So before the show, you said you love kind of walking people through some change and through these kind of conversations. In regards to pointing them to even real estate as a way to reboot, reset, restart, maybe claim a new identity or get started as an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. And real estate's a great vehicle for that.
Yes.
So if there's people out there who are interested in connecting with you, learning more about real estate and in the Winter Park area that would like to know maybe what their home's worth or what their property's worth if they're commercial, where could people go to find out more about you and to connect with you?
You can find me on my website, saruk.com, S-A-W-R-U-K.com. You can certainly reach me by my cell phone. I'm listed in all of the broker, and you can find me online. I love talking to people about real estate. I have people that I give out my business cards. I try to make myself, I put 10 business cards in my pocket every day, and I don't allow myself to come home with them.
Oh my gosh, high five. All right, that is such a great tip out there. So first of all, I'm going to put all these links in the show notes. So if you want to connect directly with Kathy, you can do that by going to the show notes. But what a great way for those who are charged with prospecting and drumming up new business. Put 10 business cards. Some of you may not even know what a business card is. I've got a pocket full of them right now. Put 10 business cards every day, and you're not allowed to go back in the house until you've given them all away.
Nope. And it doesn't matter who. It can be... I've literally given business cards to the person I've checked out with at the grocery store. And they've said, oh, I've always thought about real estate, or my niece or my nephew just has an interest in it. You never know where there's going to be a connection.
Yeah.
And if you don't connect and you don't talk to people, you won't find that out. You're not going to find it out sitting at home behind your computer. That's not going to happen.
Yeah. I gave my business card to a guy who does the trash around our area this morning. But that is such an inspiration, because I never thought of that be my goal.
Yeah.
Can I get rid of these cards and maybe help someone, inspire them, maybe be a resource for them? That's a great takeaway from like actionable prospector of like I am. Kathy, this has been such a fun and inspirational conversation. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you, Josh. It's been great.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen listening in, I hope you've enjoyed this. I hope this inspired you. Sometimes in as an entrepreneur, our lives get rocked and we have to hit the reboot button. I hope this story about movement and inspiration and staying positive and pushing through, I hope this inspired you. And I encourage you to reach out to Kathy and say, hey, what you said was valuable to me. I have some questions about X, you know, my house or my property or real estate in general. But I encourage you to reach out to her, especially if you're in Winter Park. We're here on Park Ave recording this actual episode. It's one of my favorite places to come hang out. But ladies and gentlemen in the audience, man, I just really enjoyed this, and I hope you did too. Hope you guys have a lovely day, and we will talk with you all on the next episode. Goodbye, everyone.
Thank you for listening in on today's episode. If you would like to be a guest on the show or start up a conversation with me, Josh, your host, send me an email to josh@orlandoentrepreneurs.org. You can also find out more information on Orlando's entrepreneurial ecosystem, discover resources to help you start and grow your business, and subscribe to future shows by visiting www.orlandoentrepreneurs.org.